welcome to the USEA's official podcast. My guest today is Sam Watson, the Irish rider, who also has become something of a journalist, and he's going to tell us about his new life as a married man and a soon-to-be father and what else he's up to in the eventing world. Sam, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Great to be online with you.
And as I said, so much is going on in your life, in your personal life, but let's first of all establish your heritage, because you do have some eventing genes in your family.
I do indeed. My father would like me to say that I've got a good sire. His finest hour actually came in America in Kentucky at the World Games in 1978. He had an individual silver medal at those World Games, and that was a massive result. And he had some other good results as well, back light years ago. So I've definitely grown up in an eventing family, and it took a while. I was very into rugby for a while, and I don't know if my parents they never forced me onto a pony's back or a horse's back, but eventually when I was about 16, I started to get quite keen, and gone on from there.
Well, many people will remember, of course, your father, John Watson, and that famous partner of his, Cambridge Blue, as well as that individual silver at the 1978 World Championships in Rolex. He was also on the bronze medal winning team at the European Championships the year before too, wasn't he? So do you remember anything of his career, Sam?
I don't really know. I wasn't even born then. I was born in 85, sort of 6 years later. But he went to the 88 Olympics. So again, I was still in nappies at that stage. But I do remember him producing a couple of horses to three-star level and things like that when I was a youngster, and I was generally annoying him, kicking footballs around the place and things like that. But I do remember it. But like a lot of Irish riders at that stage, he was making a living out of horses by selling them, so they'd get to that level. And he was very lucky to have had that spell with Cambridge Blue, where he in 77 he won bronze, as you said, the European. 78 was the silver medal, and the following year in Le Moulin in Germany he got a team gold in 79. So he had three real good years, and I think he had, you know, he felt then at that stage that he could concentrate on trying to make a living and sell the horses then at that stage. So that's what I remember, really.
Well, most riders will tell you they have had mentors in their life, coaches or trainers, people that have been inspirational to their career. How would you place your dad, or is he up there with mentors, or did you have other riders that you aspired to follow?
Dad is a... He is someone I look up to. I wouldn't say that when I'm on a horse, we don't work the best together. Because there is that family, that father and son thing, where it can be quite intense, and he wants the very best for me, and he'll push me a lot further than he push anyone else, and then that can work for and against you. So he definitely got me to a certain level. He got me up to 3- and 4-star level. Being a really important part behind the scenes. And then I moved from Ireland to the UK about 4 years ago to pick up then with other trainers, because we both realized that we needed to break apart, because it was too intense, and it can be difficult. It was the father-son thing. He wanted me to go through my career without having to make the mistakes he did. And, you know, I when I look back, I just think every rider needs to make their own mistakes, and there aren't that many shortcuts, and but he has been a huge help all the same, and he definitely got me up the ladder a hell of a lot quicker than if I hadn't have had him there. And now I'm old enough and mature enough to look back, I can see his good points, and I really look up to some of his qualities, his cross-country riding, his knowledge of horse fitness, and actually his determination to win, which has probably been the difficulty in our relationship, is because he's very, very competitive. But that's something that now, with a bit more distance sort of between us on a day-to-day basis, I can really look up to that, and I can aspire to that. And I'm dying to come back to Rolex, come over to you guys and try and emulate that silver medal that he got, or you know, at least in the four star there in the spring, get a really good result that I can come back and you know, say to him that I've done it too.
As you've watched your career unfold, and with that kind of heritage, Sam, would you say that you've developed as a competitor, or would you like to be considered first of all as a horseman?
I'd like to be considered first of all as a horseman. I think that is definitely what you need in 3-day eventing, and I don't think you can take any shortcuts in terms of trying to just get results without truly understanding the partnership between the horse and the rider. And you know, you learn that the hard way sometimes. And I'm definitely a very competitive person as well. I've inherited that, and I'll sometimes be at an event that I might not necessarily have planned to win. I'll go there with certain goals, such as giving the horse a bit of experience and you know, showing him a bit of an atmosphere and things like that. But maybe after the first two phases, he'll be in a great position. And if I feel the horse is ready and he can go on, and if I ask the question, you know, can you go on in the third phase and steal the victory, then I'll do that. But at the same time, I'll be in that position. And if the horse is telling me, no, I'm a bit novice, I'm not quite ready to go that fast or take those tight lines or go that direct route, then I'll back off, I think, because a short-term gain is going to be a long-term loss. You've got to be a horseman first.
So you would attribute your work ethic to your father, would you?
I think so. Yeah, he's definitely he's instilled the right qualities in me. I think he absolutely loves the sport as well, and he's a real thinker about the sport, and that's what he's given me as well. He's always encouraged me to pick up the books written by, you know, sort of legends in the sport, and to keep reading about the sport and keep learning about the sport, and not just focus on winning, but to focus on training and understanding and the bigger picture. So and that is by far the most important thing, I think, in sport for me.
And what other trainers have inspired you? Who do you enjoy working with?
I'm lucky. I've got on with a lot of people. The first person I went to in England was Tammy Hutton. Like a lot of Irish riders, my weak phase was the dressage, and I needed to learn about that. And Tammy really got me at a raw stage when I knew very little, and she helped me a lot, and I really enjoyed that. And even Pammy's mother, Molly Sibright, she was great at watching, and just she'd always give me a few comments here and there, even if I wasn't in her lesson. You know, she just enjoyed it. It was a real, they were a great teaching family. And again, if they saw a young guy who was determined to succeed and who was putting in a lot of effort, they gave you a lot more of themselves than you necessarily. You don't just pay for one lesson and then that's it. You pack up and go. They really did help me a lot, and I enjoyed that. And then Freddie Alberg took over the reins about 4 years ago, or 3 years ago maybe, when I stepped up into the Irish team. He was the Irish team trainer, and he took my dressage from the 60s right down into eventually last year. We were producing tests in the 30s at three-star level. And that's with Horsewear Bushman, my top horse. So he did a huge, you know, a massive job with me, and I really enjoyed that. And I've been really lucky. You know, the Irish team, we had Ginny Elliott at the helm. I mean, she's one of probably the most successful riders in the sport. And just to feed off that and to listen to some of the stories and to get some of the advice was brilliant. And I've been very fortunate. I've been very privileged, I think, in the people that have been around me. I'm very grateful for that.
Now, I understand you've also had some recent training with Chris Bartel, of course, is the German dressage team trainer.
Yeah, that's very much thanks to my title sponsor's Horsewear, Tom McGuinness, who runs that company. He said to me, Sam, you know, keep looking to improve, and we've still got a lot of catching up to do. When you look at the top guys in the sport at the moment, they're training as hard as anyone else, and Chris has a lot of commitments to the German team throughout the year, so January was a great time to get him during the off season. So we packed up our trucks and we took 7 horses there, and that's probably been the best training experience I've had to at this stage, when I understand a lot more. I could pick up a lot more from Chris. We were working at quite a high level, and I really enjoyed that. And I would say that Christopher is a real thinker about the sport, and he has a lovely system for training the horses. And one of the things that I love to hear him say was that he really thinks that the eventing is almost at the top of the pyramid in terms of horsemanship, because you've got to train them in dressage, show jumping, and cross country, and you can't really take a shortcut in any of those phases because the other phase suffers. So if you just gallop a horse flat out at the gallops without having it in a shape or looking after its body, then you lose marks in the dressage. And alternatively, if you bully the horse in the dressage phase to try and force it into a shape, then you lose the trust in the jumping phases. And I had a great time there, and it was a privilege to work with such a great trainer.
Did you find out why the Germans are so good at dressage then, with having that inside track?
Well, they start at an early age, and they have a good system, and they have the discipline to follow it, and it really is just, a lot of it is knowledge. A lot of dressage is just knowing how to train a horse, and then just being able to stick to that system and have the discipline yourself to stick to the system and put in the hard work. And I don't know. I mean, I just think the Germans have had that for a long time. I think they've been doing good dressage for a long time, and they can pass that on from one generation to another. I still think in Ireland, I feel here that a lot of people that I might have gone to lessons to as a youngster, if I was pulling my hair out at home and I wanted to go to someone else for a lesson, you know, we didn't have that same depth of knowledge, and the trainers didn't quite know as much as what they do in Germany. And it's definitely my ambition to try and bring that back. And I love teaching, and I'm starting to do more of it, and I want to give back to the sport here in Ireland and take some of the knowledge that I've gained from people like Freddie Alberg and Chris Bartel and Tommy Hutton, all those great trainers, and pass it back down the generations. And that's what we need to catch up with them.
Now, what did you learn about Michael Young? Any words of wisdom there, Sam?
Oh, God, he's so good. Again, he's just a hard worker, and he's cracked it in all three phases. He knows what he's looking for, and he's just so good at implementing it. And I think we tend to overcomplicate things. I think if you're at home and you're training your horse, whether it's in dressage, show jumping, or cross country, and you think to yourself, God, this is so difficult, or this is so complicated, or, you know, God, shoulder ends are so difficult, or flying changes are so difficult, then you're not on the right track. Because when you look at how Michael does it, and how he does it on every single one of his horses, and he makes it look so easy, he's making it look easy because it has become easy. And that's the key. The key is to don't be going out there every day and for you and your horses to be thinking this is hard work, because you're not going to achieve it. Or at least don't be thinking that this is really difficult. You've got to make things easy. And if you're scratching your head going, you know, thinking you're going around in circles and not understanding what's going on, then get yourself to a good trainer who does know what's going on, because it shouldn't be difficult. And you know, you as the rider and the horse that you're riding, you shouldn't be scratching your head thinking, God, what's this all about? Because that's what I learn when I look at Michael Young, is it becomes easy. And that's the way to do it.
Does he take himself as seriously as he takes his riding?
No, he doesn't. No. He has a good time. He has a good time when he's off the horse. He's a good time when he's on the horse. You know, it becomes so enjoyable, and it becomes so enjoyable for the horse as well to train in a system where everything is clear and straightforward, and you don't have a rider sort of pulling away at the reins and kicking away at the horse's side and trying to do sort of things all higgledy-piggledy. You know, when it's straight and it's structured and it's clear and it's simple, everybody enjoys themselves. And there's a couple of riders, I think Pippa Funnel and the younger English rider Laura Collard, I think they're also people that sometimes look really serious and really scary, but they're not as scary as they look. They're just focused.
Well, I'm sure you're focused on your horses right now. Let's talk about them. You mentioned Horseware Bushman, George, who you're so famous for, your partnership with him. He has done so much for you. But tell us, how is he doing? Because I know he had a bit of a setback. And what your plans are for the season with your other horses?
Bushman is in superb form. And it was great after the pressure of aiming for London and the disappointment of not making it. And I think that the whole reason I didn't make it was because I actually succumbed to the pressure on my last run at Barbary, where everyone, including the American team, everyone went there for their final trial. And like the Americans, the Irish hadn't picked their team there. And I was one of the riders that was sitting in a position with some good results under my belt and on all accounts should have been going. And then I made a mistake because I was thinking about London. I wasn't thinking about the fence in front of me. And it's a shame for the horse that he didn't make it there, because he's, as you say, he's been an absolutely terrific horse for me. He's a huge part of our family because we bred him. But the great news is that he's now turned 14 years of age, but he feels in the best shape of his life, and I think the best results are in front of us. You know, I've been quite a young and inexperienced rider throughout the last few years. You know, I haven't had a huge amount of experience on the big stage, and I've been lucky enough to get to go around Badminton, to go over to the World Games in Kentucky 2 years ago, and ride around tracks like Burley as well. And all that experience now, I think that's going to stand to me. And to have George feeling as good and in great physical shape, we're going to aim for Badminton this year. And you know, I think if we just focus on all the little things, then I hope a result will fall into place. But I'm not going to worry about trying to win things. I think that'll look after itself if we just focus on what we know how to do and produce our best test, our best cross country, and our best show jumping. I hope there's some really exciting results to come with him. So he's in great shape. And he's got lots of relatives, actually. The younger horses, I've got five horses all by the same stallion, by Puissance, who Bushman is by. I have a full brother to Bushman called Horseware Bowman. And he's an established two-star horse. So, you know, I hope he'll step up to three-star at some stage throughout this season. And another young horse who's turning eight. He had a very good two-star season last year as well. He won some intermediates in England. And he's called Horseware Luke as well. And he should be stepping up to three-star as well this year. So to have a bit of a string forming and some other younger horses behind them as well at one- and two-star level, it's really exciting. I'm looking forward to this year. Got a lot on my plate.
Yes, you do. And would you consider, George, your prospect for WEG 2014 in Normandy as a possibility?
Yeah, that's really the only goal on that's written down on paper at the moment. I want to have him in great shape for that, and I think he will be. I think the way he feels now, if I think he's still going to be in peak condition. Okay, he'll be 15, which on paper is at the older end of the scale, but like a good Irish horse and like a horse with a lot of thoroughbred in him, you know, there's longevity in his bones. He's going to keep going, and they peak later. You know, as a as a 7-year-old and even an 8-year-old, he was quite backward, and it took time, and he's really only starting in the last few years to come into his own, and that's actually reflected by his dressage scores. You know, his movement has got so much better, and even in the show jumping as well, he's jumping cleaner and he's jumping with a better shape, and he goes up the gallops just as much enthusiasm and vigor as he ever has. So Normandy next year is my big aim, and I'd love to get a big result there. And this year, 2013, is a little bit for me as well. You know, the horse is in great shape, and now it's to learn how to deliver that big result on the day when it matters. I do feel, probably mentally more than anything, I let myself down a little bit last year in that preparation, that run up to London, and I'll be looking into a bit of sport psychology and things like that. Just probably, I think the answer is to not put so much pressure on yourself. I think, and I know what I'm doing now at this stage, and the horse knows what he's doing, so we probably just need to relax a little bit and let the results take care of themselves.
Now, another thing that you've turned your hand to is writing. You've become very well known as a diarist for Eventing magazine in England there. It's something you obviously enjoy, Sam.
I do. Yeah, I enjoy it. I know, I've been lucky enough to have an education, and I went to university, and although it felt like a pain at the time, and I much enjoyed going out and having a few drinks in the evening more than I did sitting in the library during the day. I do now at this stage, after I've ridden 7 or 8 horses in a day, it's quite nice to come in the evening and turn my hand to something else. And I said when I took over the diary sort of role, I said, I'll do it, but I won't do a sort of a boring day-by-day account of what I'm doing. I said I'll probably spice it up a little bit with throw a bit of sense of humour in there as well. So I enjoy doing it, and I hope I'll keep it up in some way, shape or form, even after this year when I'm no longer doing the diary for Eventing magazine. I'll find something else to do, because I do enjoy that sort of thing. It's great.
Do you think a book then is a possibility? Or, you know, there's a lot of options these days, and I know online you can be self-published as well. Do you see yourself to be an online blogger? Would you put something on your website?
Yeah, I mean, I might look into something. Yeah, into something like that. One thing I feel really passionately about is that eventing is a great sport. It's a fantastic sport, I'm a big sports fan. I watch a lot of things. I watch, you know, golf, rugby, football, you know, everything. And I don't think we're selling our sport well enough. And I'd love to be a part of bringing it into the public eye a little bit, in again, in some way, shape, or form. I don't know what that's going to be. And whether I do that through writing or what, however I do it, I'd love to get together. We have some great personalities. I mean, we mentioned Clayton Fredericks at the top of the show, and who's moved over to America now. He's another great person. And there's loads of people like that who I think can help promote the sport and bring it to life a bit. I'd just love to be a part of that. So I'll keep my options open, and I'll just, you know, keep throwing myself into whatever opportunities come my way, I think.
Well, meanwhile, as I mentioned earlier, you're a newlywed and your wife is expecting your first child. Much anticipation around that, much excitement about being a dad for the first time, I'm sure.
Yeah, a huge amount of excitement. We're both very happy. Sparkles, as everybody knows, Hannah Bynne at this stage, Sparkles Watson, is carrying a healthy child. We actually had our 20-week scan this morning, so the baby's in great shape, and we're halfway there, another 20 weeks to go, and there'll be another Watson on the ground, so I can't wait, absolutely can't wait. It's going to be a great year for that alone.
Another Watson on the ground. Now, I know that you have already teed a few prospects up here. You know, those in England who are listening to this will know that if your parents are cricket fans, your father's a cricket fan, he might already enrol you at birth to the MCC, the Marylebone Cricket Club, if he's a cricket fan. And I think that you may not have done that with your soon-to-be son or daughter, but you do have high aspirations for them to rub shoulders with royalty, because the timing of their birth is perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, Prince William and Catherine there, expecting their first child. I think literally a day apart our due dates are, so I'll be making sure that our son or daughter is socializing in the right circles, and who knows, see if the Watson family can infiltrate the royal family. I wouldn't say no to that. I don't know what Zara will have to say when she hears these plans. She'll probably laugh at the. And I see her out at one of the events in the spring. She'll be winding me up, saying, "You trying to infiltrate my bloodlines?" But yeah, okay, no, you know, it's all good fun, and we're just very excited.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. So when is the due date, Sam?
It's the 15th of July.
Right, terrific. So,
it's smack bang in the middle of the season, but that doesn't matter. We'll find a way. I think the child's going to have to learn to adapt to the eventing season throughout its life, so why not start from the beginning.
Yes, I'm sure they'll have to get a kickstart on that at a very early age. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck with that, Sam, and for the season ahead. Good luck with it all, and keep penning your diary.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And you can find all of the podcasts on the USCA's official podcast channel on iTunes. Just look for USCA Podcast. All of the podcasts are also available here online on the USCA's website at useventing.com. I'm Chris Stafford, and I'll be back with more interviews here on the USCA podcast channel. So until next time, enjoy your eventing.